Thanks for joining us. You're listening to Family of Faith, a Faith Bible Church podcast about God's design for the family, with your host and pastor of Family Ministries, Paul Funchess.
Hey, this is Family of Faith, a podcast by Faith Bible for Faith Bible, and we are glad that you're choosing to join us this week. Today, we have in the studio with us Dan and Linda Jarms. Hey, guys.
Hey.
Hello.
Hello.
I am really thrilled that you guys are finally here. I've been trying to talk them into doing this forever, and they've been reluctant, hesitant. So Dan has been in here before, but Dan and Linda together. And I have asked Dan and Linda to come in because this is the topic we're going to talk about today is something I think they practice. And they would be the first to admit they're trying to practice it even more consistently and get better at it and grow in this area. But I think, and I've been firsthand recipient of their hospitality. And I just share a personal story real quick. The first time I met Dan and Linda was like at 9:30 at night. And I had flown in, spent all day on the plane, flown in. I was coming for a completely different reason, you know, just to meet Dan and meet the elders of the church for a seminary, representing a seminary. I had never met them before. I walked in like 9:30 at night, and I just felt welcomed right away. And what did it was the grilled cheese sandwich, the best grilled cheese sandwich I've ever had in my entire life. And I knew I was home. I was like, this is where I want to be, right here in this home. So I have been a recipient of their hospitality, and they've made their way into my heart through their home and the use of their home. And so today we want to talk about hospitality and what does it mean to be hospitable? The Bible commands us to be hospitable. What does that mean? What does that look like? And I think Dan and Linda are perfect to talk about this. So either one of you, why is this important? Why is this important for all of our church to hear? Why does the whole church need to hear a talk on hospitality?
There's probably several reasons, and right. Honey, you can jump in on some of these. I think at the foundational level, the ministry of the word needs example and life. So the best place for that to happen is in a home. Like we all love to hear sermons, but to see sermons lived out, to see Bible study lived out, usually takes some one-on-one time or some personal time, and the home's an ideal place to do that. And it's just more relaxed. It's more intimate and personal. So I think if we're talking about making disciples, the home is an ideal place for that to happen. So I think that's one of the reasons why we have to talk about it. I think the other one is that America's not a hospitality culture anymore. You know, it's not like a Middle Eastern hospitality culture that the Bible was originally written in.
Yeah.
We're a pretty private people. We like to do our spiritual things at certain times and then kind of do other things that are more, for others or for ourselves at other times. And so it's not as strong of a suit of our culture. So we might have to work at it more than other cultures might have to. What would you say?
Well, God's commandments are good, and they're for our joy. And the scripture says that we are to offer hospitality to one another. Romans 12, it says, seek to show hospitality, go after hospitality. So it's not really optional. It's something that we don't really get a pass on. And maybe we think it is, but it's not. And if we pass on it, we're missing out on the joy of stepping out in faith and seeing God use us in ways that maybe make us feel uncomfortable, but it ends up being a blessing if we seek to obey in that realm.
Yeah, I think what strikes me is just the fact that elders, the leaders of the church, are called to be hospitable. They are to be hospitable men, which is another thing I don't think many people realize. But men, the elders, are the ones told that they are to be hospitable. When we think of hospitality, we normally think of it that being the woman's thing, or that being something that the wife does. But it's a qualification of the leaders of the church, which I think has implications. If this is what the leaders of the church should be exemplifying in their life, then that means this is how the church ought to be living, right? They are to lead in that way. It's important for all of us to hear. I think we all need to hear this. So define it for us. What is hospitality? I think scripture paints a really clear picture for us of what it means to be hospitable. But either one of you, what is hospitality? Define it.
There's two parts. Maybe I'd say one is what the word hospitality, it comes from a Greek word that means to love strangers or to love visitors. And that was a common practice across the Mediterranean and still a lot of places. Somebody was traveling and visiting, you would have them in your home and provide a meal, a safe place. You know, they'd be taking horses and, you know, all the things would be part of travel. And it was really taking care of a traveler or a stranger. That's kind of the root idea. But in the Bible, that's developed quite a bit more, where you'd say it's really using your home to provide a meal, to provide rest, comfort, protection if needed to be, provision. If you take a look at how the households interacted in the New Testament, it's really the idea of opening your home and opening your heart to meet practical needs and then encourage people spiritually, biblically, through the word of Christ and the gospel. If you look at the meaning of the word, seems like it's love of strangers, but if right. you look at all the commands, I think there's six New Testament commands, but if you look at Hebrews 13, 1 and 2, or 1 Peter 4, like 6, 7, 8, 9, 10, you know, those sections, they're in the middle of brotherly love passages. Yeah. So, and even in Romans 12, there's the sense of being sincere in love and then pursuing hospitality. So you get the idea that in the Christian church in the New Testament, there was a spectrum of you had a traveler who needed a believer who needed some help, a place to lodge. They didn't have a hotel. And so Christians were called on to help other Christians. So that's one side. And then there would have even been unbelievers who you might have in your home for the purpose of caring for them and sharing the gospel with them.
Right.
But then it goes all the way to people who regularly open their home for the church to meet. So if you look at Romans 16, where different individuals had the church meet in their home. So it's this full spectrum of opening your home for a variety of needs to meet needs for people.
Yeah, through the book of Acts, I mean, that's what you see over and over again. You know, they're opening up their homes, either whether it's for Paul and his traveling party or for the church to meet there or whatever. The home is this center of Christian activity. Yeah. And loving one another, the activity of loving each other. I think 1 Peter 4 is interesting because it is in the context, you know, if you take that word hospitality, like you said already, it means love of strangers, but it's in the context of one another. Above all, keeping love or keep loving one another earnestly, since love covers a multitude of sins, show hospitality to one another without grumbling. As each has received a gift, use it to serve one another as good stewards of God's varied grace. So I think it's interesting when it says show hospitality, love of strangers to one another. Like I'm still trying to figure out, and I think that spectrum is just a really good explanation. In the book of 1 Peter, in the letter that Peter writes, he calls us sojourners and exiles. So in the context of the book, we are all strangers. We don't have a home. We're in this world that is not our home. And so as we show hospitality to each other, we're calling strangers, sojourners, exiles into our home as a way of protection and provision in the midst of, in 1 Peter's case, in the midst of intense persecution and suffering.
Yeah, the New Testament background built on the Old Testament background, Jewish hospitality was built on the idea that Yahweh is the owner of all things, especially of the promised land. And then Israel, who he rescued out of Egypt, is a guest on his land.
Yeah, yeah.
And God is the most lavish host for his people.
Yeah.
And so then commands out of Leviticus and then statements as the temple was dedicated were always acknowledging that they were sojourners or exiles on God's land.
Right.
So God's the ultimate host. He's the ultimate hospitality.
Wow.
And so then as a reflection of Yahweh's character, Israel was commanded to take care of visitors, Gentiles who travel in or strangers. Yeah. So then that just followed on to the New Testament because God is good and the supreme provider. There's a really great gospel motivation in this in Ephesians 2. In Ephesians 2, 18 and 19, that same kind of thing is picked up. And we often think of it with just strictly in the terms of Jews and Gentiles, where Jews and Gentiles are now in the same family.
Yeah.
But I think there's this great picture in Ephesians 2, 15, 16. It says that he might reconcile us both to God in one body through the cross, thereby killing the hostility. And we think of that in terms of Jew, Gentile, and now we're all one. He came and preached peace to you who were far off and peace to you who were near, for through him we both have access in one spirit to the Father. So then, and here's the interesting part, you are no longer strangers and aliens, but you are fellow citizens with the saints and members of the household of God.
Yeah.
So here we now are part of the same household or family. And so you could say in some sense that hospitality is living out God's desire to bring people into his family. It is living out his expression of love that he has shown through Christ to bring people into his family or his household. And so us bringing people into our household, strangers new to us, or then our friends and fellow Christians, treating them like family.
Right, right.
Sharing our house, sharing meals, sharing all the things that are part of life.
Finances, material possessions. And that's interesting. I mean, if we think about it in context of blood family, blood and flesh family, there are estranged relationships. We know that. And so I know there's exceptions to this, but I mean, if I think about my family and my even extended family, what would I withhold from them? What would I, you know, they have an open invitation to my home at all times, and I share life with them, and share possessions with them, and I have this commitment. You know, we talk about family and the importance of family, but if we expand that or extend that then to the household of God, if we live like that, wow, what a different way of living, I think, than most of us live. Mm-hmm. That's powerful. That's really good.
You know, I think the more we're touched by the truth that we were strangers and God welcomed us and set us at his table, the more we meditate on that truth of the mercy that we've received, I think it will compel us to look at people in our congregation or in our neighborhoods with compassion and have a desire to welcome them into our lives. So that is the heart of hospitality that you guys so articulately explained.
Well, there's a couple of beautiful passages. I think of Luke. I think it's Luke 9, where Jesus talks about many will come from east and west to sit at the table. Hmm. Luke 13, 29. Many are going to come from the east and west, and they are going to sit at the table. And it's, in a sense, a rebuke against the Pharisees who would not accept Gentiles, but it's this picture that God is going to welcome people to the great banquet table in the kingdom. So that's a really powerful picture of what salvation is going to be like. And then I think of that really intimate picture in John 14, where Jesus talks about going to prepare a place. In John 14, again, in terms of salvation, in the end, you can picture, you know, a little feel of this hospitality. He says, "Let not your hearts be troubled. Believe in God, believe also in me. In my Father's house are many rooms, and if it were not so, would I have told you that I go to prepare a place for you? And if I go to prepare a place for you, I will come again and will take you to myself, that where I am, you may be also."
Yeah.
So here, even that Jesus ultimately... He's going to step foot and build a kingdom. He's going to build the new heavens and the new earth in due time. And he's preparing a place for us. So again, that final picture of the ultimate hospitality that God will give us.
Yeah, that's good. So I'm listening to this and I'm saying, yes, I see it. This is something for all Christians. This is a way that we live out what it means to be the household of God. This is a product of our new reality in Jesus Christ, and foreshadows where we're going and where we're headed as the people of God. But what does it look like then in my life? What does it look like for me as a believer to live with a culture of hospitality? And that's the way I talk about it. It's a lifestyle. It's a way of living. It's a culture of life, of hospitable life. So what does that look like practically?
Well, I grew up in a home where hospitality was modeled. And kind of fun to look back on what I witnessed as far as what it looked like. My mom and dad welcomed all sorts of people in our home growing up, poor people, guys from the Union Gospel Mission who were trying to get their life back on track were at our table. Down and out, there were missionaries in our home regularly because my parents were missionaries. And what a night looked like for me growing up, my mom and dad always welcomed our guests at the door very warmly. They would rush to the door and there would be a big hello, so happy to see you. And that set the tone for the night.
It's good.
The home was never perfect. My mom is the sweetest soul you will have ever met, but she wasn't a great housekeeper. So the house wasn't perfect. That was modeled to me. What was modeled to me is that joy and lives shared has very little to do with how perfect your house looks. Now, I do want to clarify, you should clean your toilet. You should do a few things to make sure that your guests are comfortable. I'm not advocating a messy home, but your home does not have to be perfect, and that certainly should not be a barrier to your hospitality. And in some ways, even as I asked my kids about hospitality and what they remember, they said that they appreciated that I had a comfortable home. I didn't know if that was a insult, but they appreciate the home was comfortable, that the kids that would come and hang out felt comfortable. But anyhow, back to my mom and dad, they had about two meals that they served people. I remember it was either minestrone or pasta, and there was always a big salad, but it was served with a spirit of abundance. There was always plenty of food. We'd gather on the table, and my dad was a character, and he just loved to make people laugh. So there was always some unexpected routine that my dad would go through. If someone asked for the rolls, he would throw them across the table.
There you go, home of the throat rolls.
Yeah, yeah.
Lambert's Cafe.
Yeah, exactly. And that's just one of the many crazy things he would do. The night would usually end in music. My dad learned to play the accordion at 64. And he played badly all the way till his death at 97. So our guests were subjected to bad accordion playing at the end of the night. But as a child, as a teenager, I would watch the faces of our guests and I would watch them soften and I would watch the smiles on their faces as they would spend time with Carlo and Polly. And as the night ended, there was always something in our guests' hands, leftover food, anything. They would send the guests away with. They never sent people away empty-handed. So did they have a lot of money? No, we were missionaries. We lived in a very little tiny apartment in Italy. In Yakima, we lived in a very modest little home in the industrial part of Yakima. But they shared what they had, and they shared it with love. And they reached out to people who couldn't give back to them. It was usually people that society kind of wants to push aside that were in our home. And so at the time, I didn't appreciate it. But now as I look at the biblical model of hospitality, they actually kind of really had it spot on. And so I really appreciate that model. And from there, we did some things in our own home also.
Yeah. Yeah. That's good. Talk a little bit about, so I'm thinking families. Let's think young families for a moment. Mm-hmm. They got kids. They are busy, working hard. Working long hours. They all want to be hospitable, but they just don't have time, or they don't have the bandwidth What does it need to look like, or what could it look like?
I think we would look at our weekends, and we would just almost always say one of the nights in a weekend, we want to share it with somebody.
Yeah.
So then sharing it with somebody, and it was a lot of times people with kids our age, that's a natural place to have those connections, but it could be a variety of people. So one night a weekend, we were thinking about that. I think Linda learned how to make a set of go-to meals that made it kind of simple, and she still does that. So she's come up with some things that are like a treat for everybody, but we have them all the time, and they're great go-to meals. And so, you know, it was a lot the same. She would get the kids excited about it, saying, yeah, we have guests coming over, and the kids were always excited about it when they were little. We had to make sure we didn't try to make it too big, because I think the place that we lived at when the kids were little, like, you could just have one family over. That's all you could do. But that was great. And so, yeah, we all crowded around a table, but it was kind of the same idea. We wanted it to be fun, and we wanted to get to know people. And, we would just pick appropriate levels. If you pick similar age kids and you don't have to, you know, they can play together too.
Right.
So that's a real help. So hospitality did shift through the kids' growing up years. One of the things that shifted for us is we were hospitable to our kids' friends. And so as they made friends, they would spend time in our home, and we would open up our home to them.
Yeah. We wanted to be the house that all the kids came to. We tried.
Yeah. Yeah. And that, here's the cost on that. You know, the teenagers make a mess, and they don't walk out.
Yeah, Seth.
Yeah. Our producer's here. He was one of the guys who was often laying on the couch.
He was so messy.
He was a beneficiary of hospitality. Yeah.
But
he's still messy.
We had a variety of our kids' friends over, and that cost you sleep because they'd be up late, or it would cost you maybe a little extra food, or usually it cost extra dishes time in the morning because, you know, you'd wake up and there'd be a bunch of dishes and
punks.
Yeah. That's strong feelings from her.
Yeah.
But
that was a joy. It was just a joy to have our kids have their friends over. And some of those kids weren't believers and still aren't believers. And yet when we see them, it's a warm relationship. So I would say just try to keep yourself open and just make it as simple as it needs to be to keep your home open. But that was definitely something true. And now all of our kids love to do hospitality. It was just something that was natural, mostly because they learned it from their mother. I'm just really flexible. Like, oh, sure, we want to do that? Great.
I think that's it, though. Isn't that part of the... Because you had started the podcast talking about, isn't it interesting that hospitality is something that men, the leaders of the church,
right,
are commanded to do, to exemplify
right
to the church.
Right.
But yet it's something that the woman, in a lot of ways, kind of fleshes out. But it's something that if you don't have a flexible husband, you couldn't really do it. So
right,
the flexibility and the willingness to make it happen, you definitely had that. But yeah, it was really invaluable to show hospitality to your kids' friends.
Yeah.
We saw how our kids were relating to their friends. We saw what kind of friends they were hanging out with.
Yeah.
Seth, no. I'm sorry.
Great friends.
And now we're started doing some premarital counseling with some of those same kids that were laying around on our couches when they were 16. So
yeah.
it's a blessing.
What else would you say, hon?
Yeah, for young families, I think life can get really busy and you can get really worn out. But if you plan ahead, that really helps.
That's good.
And keep it simple. Keep your expectations low. With little kids, sometimes you spend a lot of the night kind of taking care of the kids. But like you were saying, Paul, a lot of modeling of life happens. You know, you might have a couple over and they'll watch how you put your kids to bed at night. And there's a lot that another family maybe could learn, or we could learn from the other family about discipline and nightly routines and prayer time. And so just that life on life.
Yeah.
It is a hard time when kids are little. I remember trying to clean the house and right before the guests would come, they would throw all the pillows on the ground. And, you know, it's like, what just happened here? But it's still worth it to open up your home, even when you're in that really busy, tiring season of little kids. But
yeah.
have balance and do what you can and work with your husband and plan it.
Yeah.
Yeah.
Yeah. So if every, you know, if every week and is like, oh, that's terrifying to me, just pick up, you know, maybe once a month.
Yeah.
But what we found when our kids were little, we really wanted to hang out with people. We really needed, it was, it was like, what are we going to do? Lay on the floor and the kids jump on me all night. Right. You know, I mean, it was nice to have some kind of some structure and some fun and include some other people. So it was just fun for us.
And it's a great opportunity to start training your kids. I remember when they were a little older, like beyond toddler years, we would prepare them by talking about who was coming over for dinner. We'd think of questions to ask them. We, Dan and I still do that. If it's somebody new, we try to think of questions since we're not always the best conversationalists. So we have to like prepare. And we would, I would enlist Brenna when she was little to help me set the table, help me cook so that she was thinking about others.
Yeah.
We would make sure that our kids were at the table when they were young enough to understand what was going on. And I think that's a just incredibly valuable time. I recently heard a podcast and the wife said, oh yeah, just send the kids downstairs, feed them before, then you can sit and have dinner with your friends and enjoy your company. And I was like, no.
Yeah.
I mean, you can do that once in a while. We don't
preach
have to
that,
be.
Preach that, Linda. Preach that. No, that's good.
Good. Put your kids at the table. Ask your guests about their testimony. If they're missionaries, of course, ask missionary stories. If it's a couple that you're evangelizing, have your kids watch you try to evangelize.
Yeah.
We didn't ever do any of that perfectly or as much as we should have. But keep your kids at that table, and there's a lot that can be learned there.
Yeah, and I would say, if your kid's a year and a half, you know, maybe you find something else for them to do. But you know, like your kids, as soon as they're able to understand what's happening, you know, they need to be at the table, looking at, you know, hearing the conversations and teaching them. I think this has been something that we've emphasized in our house, even recently, is learn how to ask questions instead of dominating the conversation. For our family, we like to talk about ourselves a lot, and we like to share, we like to talk about us and our stories, and our kids are the same way, where they just like to, you know what I did today, you know, this is what I did today, you'll never believe what I dreamed about today, or whatever, you know. They have some crazy things they talk about, but teach your kids how to ask questions of people. And that's a discipline. That's something that's hard to do. So those are opportunities to teach them how to do that. I would say to what Dan said, you know, plan ahead. Try to plan something that's feasible. You know, every weekend might be too much, but one weekend a month. And then plan to have people over that will encourage you, but also plan to have people over that you can be an encouragement to. You know, you want to have people over that will be encouraging to you, but you also want to be, you know, inviting people over that really need encouragement, looking for those people in your church that are lonely, looking for those people in your neighborhood that need the gospel. When is the last time you had someone in your home that was an unbeliever that needed the gospel and your intention in having them over was to try to have a gospel conversation with them? I'm not trying to preach at people, but I'm kind of trying to preach at people a little bit there, you know?
Well, I think that's the thing about biblical hospitality. Yeah. There's a sense where it's part of the one another's commands, but there was a real sense in the early church that you had your friends who weren't believers yet into your home, and that was the best place to have a longer gospel conversation. Yeah. We think of gospel conversations as, did I get through Two Ways to Live, or did I get through the Way of the Master plan, or did I get through the Romans Road?
Right.
Did I hand them an invitation? Did they come to church?
Right.
And we think of those of evangelism in those very narrow ways. But New Testament evangelism was, I had somebody over to my house, or they invited me over, and we just got to talk over long time over the truth of the Scripture and related to who they are and what they're going through.
I think of, and many of you are listening or aware of this book, Rosaria Butterfield's book on hospitality, The Gospel Comes with a House Key. I would recommend that book to you, but that's the example. She was invited over by a pastor and his wife who just had her over for, I think she ends up saying, the hundreds of meals that she shared with them, the conversation that lasted over 2 years with them. And I may be wrong on my timing, but it was years of just hospitality that this pastor and his wife showed her. And she was living in a lesbian lifestyle, and she came to Christ over years of ministry. So the gospel conversations we're going to have with people, they are going to take a long time, and you're going to need to have an open home with these people. So, and that's exciting to think about. It's exciting to think about sharing my home with unbelievers. And I hope that that's exciting to other people. What would you say to a person in the body who says, and I've heard this a lot, I don't feel connected to people in the church. I'm having a hard time getting connected. What would you say to them?
It's a push-pull. So right. there's two sides of this. We as a church need to think about the more traditional view of hospitality, which is welcoming newcomers. So we all need to be on the lookout if somebody's new to our growth group, somebody's new to the church, we meet them in the foyer. We always need to be looking to a way to build some kind of relationship. So home, or I'd even say coffee or lunch out is really practical and really helpful. So we need to be looking. So the church needs to own a little bit on that. All of us need to own a little bit. If somebody says, I'm not feeling connected. But another person who says, I'm not feeling connected, they should do the same thing.
Right.
They should seek to who to invest in. You know, with the weird and wild story of why I built a pizza oven, which we're not going to talk about here. You know, one of the things that happened to us is all of a sudden people like to come to our house, which made it really nice. We have a lot of new friends because of a pizza oven. But people will tease us a little bit. Well, I've never been invited over, and I'll look at them and it's like, I don't remember the last time I was invited to your house either.
That's funny.
So people kind of think of it in one way terms, but you have to go both ways.
Right.
You want to be hospitable, and other people can extend hospitality as well. So yeah. If you're not connected, you could just have people over and talk about life.
You know what I would say? I would say it's really hard to come to church and you have expectations that it's going to feel like what it should be, a body, a family.
Yeah.
And it doesn't always feel that way. And that's a hard emotion of feeling isolated.
Yeah.
But the church is precious, but it's not perfect. But I would also say to those people, push past that feeling and say to them what I had said to my kids when they were sometimes not feeling connected at church when they were growing up. Let's go to church looking for people to love and reach out to and serve. And the best way to fight that feeling of loneliness and isolation is to reach out to somebody. And I guarantee there's somebody every Sunday to reach out to and serve.
Yeah. Yeah.
Mark 10:45 is a verse that I would go to. The Son of Man came not to be served, but to serve and give his life as a ransom for many. So Christ is our example of the attitude that we should have, not looking to be served, but to serve.
Yeah. In the Rosaria Butterfield book, one thing she says is, start somewhere, start today. So if you're sitting there thinking, you know, I do want this to be a part of my life. I do want this to be the culture of my life. I do want this to be the way I live my life, but I don't know where to start. Well, start somewhere, and start today, and just start where you see, an opportunity to invite someone over, or invite someone out for coffee or a meal out. That's is fine. But I do think it's not as complicated as we make it. It really, the opportunities are right in front of us and are easy to see once we have eyes to see them, you know, or once we have eyes to see them. I think practically, let's get into practical. Dan's already said, you know, set a plan, make a plan. If you don't make a plan, you won't do this. I think you'll always find a reason why not, you know, or that you're too busy.
And I think too, just asking God to show you what are the sinful barriers in my heart against hospitality.
Right?
Is it selfishness with my time, with my money? Is it for me? It's people pleasing.
Yeah.
I want people to like us when they leave our house.
Yeah. We talk about one of our biggest barriers to hospitality is that they come into their home and then they realize, oh, that's all there is to the Jarms. That's it.
They're kind of boring. But no, seriously, I had to overcome. Hospitality is a vulnerable thing. You're letting people into your life. and into your home.
Yeah.
And now, just being transparent, I'm following from last week.
That's good. Transparency's good.
Yeah, there it is. Yeah. But Dan told me the other day, I said, what do I do with that? I still battle. We were about to have a couple over who were like, we need some godly wisdom. And I'm like, honey, where are we going to get this godly wisdom? Can we call somebody? And then Dan said, honey, get your eyes. He didn't say it like this. He's very gentle with me. But he basically said, this is what I heard. Get your eyes off yourself and look to Christ. And then let's look at those people when they come through our door. And let's just love them. And we can offer Christ to them. It's not about us.
Yeah.
But we all have roadblocks to hospitality. And I would say start there and ask the Lord to show what they are, confess them, and then step out in faith. Because hospitality for me is something that I need a lot of grace for, actually. But as you step out in faith to do something that you're uncomfortable with every time, God pours more grace every time. And so it's really cool to witness that.
Yeah.
I think it's important to think of what hospitality isn't, or maybe I would say it, hospitality is not necessarily dot, dot, dot. It's not necessarily making a Pinterest perfect meal. It's not necessarily Pinterest perfect decor.
Yeah.
It's not necessarily wowing them with entertainment.
Right.
That's not necessarily hospitality. It really is just saying, I want to love this person in a closer way because they're made in the image of God.
Yeah.
They may be brothers or sisters in Christ, and I just want to show them genuine care and love, and then do what you can to do that. Just do what you can. Meaning, if all you can do is have a big pot of soup, and that's what you can.
We've done lots of different things to show hospitality that don't involve setting a table and having a meal. We used to do a candy cane party at Christmas time for the neighborhood kids.
Yeah.
And all the neighborhood kids would come over and Dan would read the Christmas story to them as a bridge to the gospel.
Yeah.
Even just last year, we enlisted our now adult kids to help us with a piano recital in our neighborhood that we invited all the neighbors to. And Evan played the ukulele and Brenna helped me decorate. And we had the neighbors over and shared that time with them. Yeah. Many times when I'm feeling kind of fried, I'm kind of tired, and I know a person is asked to come over, or I'll just give them dessert. You know, if sometimes you just don't have any more that you can do. So people are happy with dessert as long as they want your time.
Yeah.
I think time is even more important than food, even though I'm Italian, I'm all about food.
Yeah.
But so there's just different ways to show it.
Yeah. Opening up your house to your neighbors and creating an environment where they feel they can come and go as they need to. My wife has had so many good conversations with some of the neighborhood wives who are there all day with their kids or are stay-at-home moms, and they just need somebody to talk to. So it's not a meal that we prepare. It's just, you know, the kids play in our backyard and the moms come into the kitchen while my wife's making dinner and just talk about their lives, their families, their worries and all those things. And what a inroad for the gospel that she has with them. And she never has to, you know, she's folding laundry while they're talking to her or whatever. I will say, and I want to say that a life of hospitality will cost you something. It will cost you time. It will cost you, maybe even financially, maybe even, your personal rest time. I think like a Sundays, I'm going to be transparent here too. I like my Sunday afternoons to myself because I'm around people all the time and Sunday morning is draining. And so Sunday afternoon to me is like, that's me time. I don't want to be around other people. And as a family, it's an important time for us to just be our family. But it's also a great opportunity to have people over from the church because Sundays are a time where most people have free. You know, most people aren't working on Sundays. And so it will cost you in some ways, and you'll have to be willing to pay that cost. In light of the fact that these are commands in the New Testament, in light of the fact that this is for every believer, that to live in this way. This might be a subject that creates some good conversation between husband and wife, or you as a family, you know, think about why your family exists. What do we exist to do? And there might be some restructuring needed in your life. If you're saying, well, when would I do this? You know, we're never home. There's not a night of the week that we're home. There's not a weekend that's free. This might be an opportunity for some good, hard conversations of, you know, why isn't this part of our life if this is a expectation of the New Testament? And what do we need to start cutting back on? Or how do we need to restructure our lives in order to be carrying these things out? And I think, and I'm hoping that that's what this creates for some of our families. So Dan, Linda, thanks for coming in.
Thanks for having us.
Our pleasure.
And I hope that's this isn't the last time.
Yeah. I hope not too.
Yeah.
It might be. We'll see.
It wasn't too painful, was it?
It's very painful.
Oh, very painful. All right. So thanks for joining us on Family of Faith. Again, we've had some more questions recently. If you have questions or if you'd have an idea for a podcast topic, please contact us by email at info@fbchurch.org and we will respond or be in touch with you.
Thanks for listening to Family of Faith. This podcast is a production of Family Ministries at Faith Bible Church in Spokane, Washington. Feel free to share. We only ask that you do not alter the content in any way and that you do not charge for it. Visit us at fbchurch.org for more resources, articles, and information about our ministries.